Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. He went off the air on August 6th, but we are waiting until now so you can think for a while about what Jon Stewart meant in The Daily Show and Jon Stewart on The Daily Show meant to you. We're going to be talking about the legacy of Jon Stewart and his long participation for 16 years of host of that program. He once said, what is most important in life is doing something worthwhile. And many people will say that what he did was entirely worthwhile. In fact, one of our guests has pointed to a piece in Salon in which this question was asked, was he the most important American satirist ever? And the author believes that he was. We have two guests with us the course of this hour, and we'll hear from Jon Stewart on his show, not in person. Maybe we'll have him on in person during a future show. And we'll be welcoming phone calls as you think about his contribution to the world of politics, to informing us. Isn't it interesting that a comedian gave us a whole lot of news? We'll talk about all of that this hour. Lisa Rozak is with us. She is author of Angry Optimist, The Life and Times of Jon Stewart. She's the New York Times bestselling author of more than 40 books, including Haunted Heart, The Life and Times of Stephen King, which was nominated for an Edgar. She's also started a greeting card company for dogs and cats. I like that. And she's done other things in her life as well. Lisa, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Thank you, Lisa. Dr. Jeffrey Jones is with us. He's professor and Lampkin K chair for the Peabody's and director of the George Foster Peabody Awards. He's the author of 5 books, including Entertaining Politics, Satirical Television and Political Engagement, and Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. Dr. Jeffrey Jones, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great. Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Let's start with the question that I started with and you had me think about. Is he the most important satirist ever? Dr. Jones?
You know, comparing across historical eras, I'm going to hedge my bet. But clearly, he's a transformative figure in, the new millennium in both late-night television as well as how media, at least television media, engage with politics. It's hard to compare that to Mark Twain or Jonathan Swift, but clearly, you know, here's someone who emerged seemingly out of nowhere, though, the groundwork was prepped for him to be there and be successful. And he's clearly changed how we think about late-night television, but also how television entertainment engages with the political sphere.
Absolutely. And Lisa, how did he prepare himself for this job? Was it happenstance? Because when you write about what his early life was, it's kind of surprising that he wound up doing what he was doing and became so prominent.
Exactly, because he's basically stumbled into everything that he's done up until The Daily Show. He started famously as a stand-up comic, but during his teenage years and post-college career, he had a bunch of insignificant and wildly diverse jobs, ranging from a bartender where the Ramones hung out in Trenton, New Jersey, to a mosquito sex separator in conjunction with a local biological lab, in Jersey. I mean, he's a Jersey boy. He's used to pulling himself up from his bootstraps. But when he first moved from Jersey, and I can say all this because I'm from Jersey, When he first moved into New York City to make his way as a stand-up comic, he had never been on stage before. And once he moved to Manhattan, it took him 2 years to get up the courage to actually go to one of these late-night open mics in the city.
It's amazing how people become what they become. Let's talk about politics for a moment and the fact that he really did. This show became, and particularly for younger people, although for people of all ages, really a primary source for news, that we trusted Jon Stewart to give us the news. He had a terrific research team, so you would see clips that were very carefully gleaned. And you immediately got a sense of hypocrisy and also a sense they were searching for the truth, the people who put that show together, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, and you know, that's a figure that people used early in the Daily Show's popularity, that, oh, isn't this the downfall of democracy, that young people are tuning in. And, you know, I think our research suggested that that's not the case, that information consumers graze across numerous platforms. But what was kind of transformative for Jon Stewart was, exactly like you said, there seemed to be something that could be trusted there. And in fact, he began ranking in polls in the mid-2000s as one of the more trustworthy voices. And it's just because he seemed more authentic. I mean, we have to think about the environment that news media often had become and is often, television news. It seems very fake, very produced, these contrived battles amongst people and somewhat predictable. And Jon Stewart's fake approach to news really seemed more trustworthy and honest and authentic. And I think that's something that younger generations embrace, that and its playfulness. And, of course, he was actually breaking news a lot of times, especially in moments of the Great Recession or the war in Iraq, when people weren't always asking tough questions in the news media.
And he would do it, certainly, Lisa, with this incredibly, you know, backstage he may be a different kind of guy, and we'll talk some of that about that as we go on here. But the guy could use his face like very few people can. He was so engaging to watch. He was a great mimic. He had incredible vocal range. He was just an interesting person. He added that whole element that if you're going to be mostly a news satire show, but he elevated that by who he is and how he performs.
Exactly. But an interesting point to make is that he always, whenever somebody asked, well, you're a journalist, or told him, well, you're a journalist, he always said, no, I'm not a journalist. I'm a late night entertainer. And when he first started on The Daily Show, he specifically wanted to skewer the media because, yes, as Dr. Jones has said, he wanted to, everything was so fake, you know, it's gotten worse, of course, today. But because he was taking over from Craig Kilborn, who had imbued the tone of the show with a kind of frat boy sensibility. And when Stewart took over, a lot of people on the show actually quit. And they were very angry that Stewart wanted to change the direction of the show. And soon after, maybe within the first year, once the primary season began and the presidential campaign season began in earnest, for coming into 2000, that's when he turned his attention to also skewering politics in addition to the media. So it kind of dovetailed very, very neatly in that regard.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons we desperately miss him now, because, oh, he could skewer politicians like nobody. You talked, Dr. Jones, we have a few clips of Jon Stewart on The Daily Show about his taking on this partisanship and having a different kind of conversation. Let's listen to his appearance on Crossfire. And some have said that his appearance and what he said on this show was ultimately responsible for the cancellation of the show. So we'll get your response, both of you, to this. This is Jon Stewart on Crossfire.
It's funny, you know, and I made a special effort to come on the show today because I have privately, amongst my friends, and also in occasional newspapers and television shows, mentioned this show as being bad. I felt that that wasn't fair, and I should come here and tell you that I don't, it's not so much that it's bad as it's hurting America. So I wanted to
but
come here today
defense, let me,
and say,
wait,
just,
no, let me,
here's just what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America.
Okay, now let me
come work for us, because we, as the people.
How do you pay?
The people, not well.
Better than CNN, I'm sure.
But you can sleep at night. See, the thing is, we need your help. you're right now you're helping the politicians and the corporations, and we're left out there to mow our lawns.
You just said we're too rough on them when they make mistakes.
No, you're not too rough on them. You are part of their strategies. Your partisan, what do you call it, hacks.
Wait, Sean, wait, let me tell you something.
Dr. Jones, how do you analyze that?
It's I think this is a transformative moment for Jones. Stewart. Some people date his kind of transformation back to the 9/11 broadcast. But for me, the appearance on Crossfire was transformative. And you can hear it in how the audience laughs. Up until this point, you know, Jon Stewart, and I have this in the first edition of the book, he said, we're in the back of the room throwing spitballs. Mm. And was seen as in many ways as a jester type of figure. And really with the Crossfire appearance, it was shocking, even to me. And you hear the audience laughing as if he's telling jokes. And he's not telling jokes at all.
No.
And as the interview goes along and the tension between he and the bow tie wearing dude, what's his name? Tucker Carlson. you really kind of realize, wow, this is not the Jon Stewart. And the host even say, well, we thought you were going to be funny, you know, like, and Stewart says in response, I'm not your monkey. And so it really was this coming out moment for Stewart in which he doubled down and said, this is a critical moment in our nation's history. We're at war, and you guys are a spectacle, and you're not doing us any favors. And I think you can chart his history after that. He removes the couch in his show. He puts in a desk. He starts bringing on authors and politicians, and he really doubles down on how he is owning up to his role as a public a figure in public life in American politics. And so, it's a really transformative moment.
Interesting. Did you see hints of that kind of Jon Stewart earlier in his life, Lisa?
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, he started off keeping himself in the background and just observing to a large extent during his high school years and then leading into college and then even going into his early stand-up days. You fast forward to the Crossfire year, 2004, and well, even to 99, he had a soapbox. Even on his earlier MTV show, he didn't treat it as a soapbox. It was somebody coined the term for him, the voice of the slacker generation, when the MTV talk show was on for 1 year and then it went into syndication for the following year in 94, 95, I believe. The interesting thing about the Crossfire appearance is he went out of character.
Right.
You know, he on The Daily Show, he is an exaggerated version of himself, where he stresses. I mean, that's why we chose the title of the book, Angry Optimist, because you can't help but see how he gets red in the face. He starts spouting and sitting, and he gets really incensed. And again, going back to Dr. Jones' earlier phrase, yes, he's real. He's real as compared to all these other synthetic talking heads on TV. And he really caught the bow tie dude and everybody else off guard because they thought he was going to play nice. He was on the show to push a book.
Right.
Promote one of his books. And, you know, I think that it was a transformative moment for him, but also for his show and for, you know, you couldn't, from then on, show bookers for other talk shows, you know, they were a little nervous about booking him. So it was a great moment in his career.
You also see him as a reformer there. I mean, he's clearly not a cynic. He's clearly saying the road forward for us as a nation in this time of peril is only going to be achieved outside the spectacle displays that are being produced in for, like here, and presented as public information.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. And, mm-hmm. And I think him as a reformer was continued throughout his career, whether it's the, you know, some many journalists couldn't seem to understand the march that he and Colbert did, the rally to restore sanity. What's your point? Are you trying to, you know, change the midterm elections? And the answer is no. They're basically saying how we conduct discourse in this country about politics is your opponent is not your enemy. And that's clear. And he over and over did that. And this was, to me, his coming out moment where he really stake that claim in the public space.
Yeah. Let's talk about the use of video clips. He had a team that really could pull things in. It's what people said. There was the evidence of it, and he could make people look ridiculous without saying very much of anything. All he had to do was show the clips.
Maureen Dowd, early on, the New York Times brought him in, and they do a lunch, and brought John Stewart in, and all these reporters with, you know, our flagship newspaper say, how do you get these clips? Like, and he just says, an intern in a videotape machine. and you know, his point was the public record is there. You just dig for it and show it up to them. Now, of course, I mean, the problem for television is that this game that's played between journalists and politicians, they both need each other. But in a pre-John Stewart era, it's just not as acceptable for journalists to do a thing where they'll show a politician saying the exact opposite and
yes,
showing them saying the exact opposite 10 different times. That's kind of rubbing
right
a politician's face in it. And journalists often aren't really willing to go there. It suggests bias. It suggests they're on a crusade to get them. And they frankly need a good relationship with politicians to do their jobs. John Stewart's not playing that game. He can do something different. And so clearly in a period in time in which, you know, we had an administration that was not always very truthful with the public or would say one thing that was very different than what they'd said before, that became a very valued technique of redaction, but also of just showing that the public record is actually different than what the politician would have.
We welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about the legacy of John Stewart this hour of the program, who, of course, was for four nights a week and 16 years. That's a long time to do that program, the energy that it takes to do that, what his contribution has been. And both our guests would say, I'm sure, that it's been enormous. We have two guests with us this hour. One is the author of Angry Optimist, The Life and Times of John Stewart. And another is the author of Entertaining Politics, Satirical Television and Political Engagement, and Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. We welcome your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. We want to weave some John Stewart bits into this program, and some of them are older. They're fun to listen to again. This is John Stewart on The Daily Show on the victory of George W. Bush.
As for George W. Bush watched Gore's concession speech, and his reaction was as expected. Then at 10 p.m., it was time for President-elect Bush to address the nation, or at least read to it. At first, he alluded to another close election some 200 years ago.
After 6 days of voting and 36 ballots, the House of Representatives elected Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States.
Adding, me? I'm not even George Jefferson.
I was not elected to serve one party.
You were not elected.
I hit a nerve.
Nevertheless, Bush continued.
I have something else to ask you, to ask every American. I ask for you to pray for this great nation.
We're way ahead of you.
Let's go to phone calls for both our guests. We talk about the legacy of John Stewart this hour of the program. Carol in Oak Creek, our first caller. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Hey, did you hear that there's a petition going around to have John Stewart moderate the presidential debates? The petition is on change.org, and he's already got nearly 300,000 signatures. I think he would make a wonderful moderator. It's no joke. I think he'd be great because he'd attract more millennials to the presidential process.
Yeah, I think he'd be great, too. Lisa, what do you think?
I think that's a great idea, but I think that the Republicans would do it's the only thing that would bring all of the Republicans together to refuse to have him moderate.
What do you think, Dr. Jones?
I think Lisa's correct in that the political system would, in particular Republicans, they've always, in particular his relationship with Fox News and their host has been a contentious one, and they've always branded him as a liberal and would see that as a biased or partisan move. I agree with the caller, Carol. I think it would be a fantastic. I have referred to this before as that, politicians and the news media are on the same gerbil wheel. And it doesn't mean I'm criticizing journalists as much as they're involved in the same business. There's the same kind of epistemology of understanding how this game works. And John Stewart is kind of our modern Johnny Carson. In many ways, he's a everyman figure like Carson was.
Yes.
Midwest.
Right.
And Stewart, I think, brings that outsider's perspective that has garnered now, as Carol said, 120,000 signatures, I believe we're up to.
No, 300,000.
300,000. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I think people want to see not the same, people ask those same inside the beltway type of questions. And Stewart has clearly shown that he thinks different than those who play that media a game in that media politics nexus.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fox is all about the numbers too. All of those shows are. To have John Stewart moderate, who cares? They didn't stand behind Megyn Kelly very well. Probably
yeah.
Think she's a liberal now too. They'd get more people watching with John Stewart, right?
It's a good point. I mean, Fox is currently sitting on this weird place of the numbers game versus its other role, which is this kind of central rhetorical center for Republican politics. And so you're right, from an economic standpoint, clearly money could be made. I'm not sure that, but again, what are we talking about? The general election, a Democratic debate? I think people want to see him when it comes push to shove between Democrats and Republicans, that he's a serious enough figure to ask tough questions.
Yes.
And get illicit responses.
Yes.
That are not just the prototypical thing that is typically offered in those fora.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, what do you think? Would he consider it seriously if he were so asked?
I'm not sure if he would be up for it. I mean, I think he wants to put some distance between himself and The Daily Show, and I think that moderating one of the debates would cause people to think maybe he would go back to doing The Daily Show or something. I think he really wants to focus on being behind the scenes, behind the camera, to some extent, to go into maybe directing more movies like Rosewater. I think once I heard he was going to direct Rosewater a couple of years ago, I said he's not going to be in for another year or two. He's not going to continue with The Daily Show because, you do a show like that for as long as he did it, even with a huge staff. It's exhausting.
Right.
And, after 8 years of Bush and then 8 years close to eight years of Obama, it's hard to, he got stale for a few years in there during both administrations, and I think he just, and people don't realize that it's his production company that produced not only The Daily Show but also The Colbert Report, and is going to be producing the continuing to produce the I'm sorry, there's so many revolving chairs in late night right now.
The Nightly Show?
Yeah. And so I just think that he really just wants to focus on being behind the scenes for a while.
Hmm. Thank you, Carol, very much for your call. Dana in Hudson, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm only 19 years old, but I've been watching Jon Stewart for a very long time, and I'm learning that a lot of my peers have as well. And through him, we have learned a lot about the hypocrisy and the games that are played in politics. So my question is, how do you believe his legacy will continue through both first-year voters as well as people who have been voting throughout the decades, and will it affect anything as to how we lean?
Dr. Jones.
Dana, clarify, are you saying that without his presence in the public space that young voters won't be as attached to politics, or are you saying that because of his influence that we'll still be feeling that?
Because of his influence and what we've learned from him before he could vote.
Yeah, I mean, I've argued a long time that Jon Stewart taught media literacy. He taught people how to be critical of the information they receive about politics, how to read political rhetoric, how to decipher it, how to look for meaning in speech. And I think, as Dana's suggesting, that if young people were tuning in, that they learned something about how to watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. And hopefully that plays itself eventually to the ballot box. But I think being critical consumers of public information is perhaps one of his greatest legacies.
And Dana, you said you were very young when you started watching him. You just watched it in your household, or did you watch it by yourself in your household?
I definitely started out watching it with my family, but I soon learned to watch it by myself and analyze it alone. It was great.
And a lot of your friends watched too?
Yes, I learned they did as well.
Yeah. What are you going to study in college? Political science, I hope.
Yes, I am studying.
Are you really? I said that not knowing that would be the answer. So you're going to do a TV show, right? Satirical political TV show. Dana?
Maybe.
There's a need for it. All right. Thank you very much for the call. I think it's wonderful, and I think that studies do prove this, Dr. Jones, that a lot more people, and Lisa, maybe you have numbers on this too, young people were much more involved in politics as a result of this show. They knew what was going on in the world, and that is such a good thing. No, go ahead, Lisa.
An interesting thing happened over the course of Jon Stewart's tenure on The Daily Show. When he first started, and again during his predecessor's reign as well, the average age of the viewers of The Daily Show were college students, basically, early 20s to mid-20s. And then over the years, it increased. So I believe that in the last year, I read something where the median age was now, or the average age was now 42 or 43.
Hmm.
And I think that he definitely, growing up, Dana has been shaped by this guy. Her whole generation has been shaped by this guy, his viewpoint, and how he encouraged and taught people of all ages to not take anything at face value, whether it's the media or politics. And I think that's one of Stewart's strongest legacies. And, some people have worried, oh, who's going to carry the torch? You know, nobody can replace Stewart or things like that. But I truly believe that that has been one of his biggest contributions to culture. And these kids are fired up. They're going to go out do what he told them to and he taught people by through conveying information and telling them about the news every day, but also making them laugh. And you're going to
remember the news a lot more readily if you laugh about
yes,
it.
Yes, how true.
You know, than if you're crying about it. You're going to want to push it away as much as possible. And I think that part of his legacy has largely been overlooked in all the accolades and the honors that have poured forth, you know, over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I mean, Lisa's correct in that the numbers I looked at in his Nielsen ratings in 2009 skewed a lot higher and more women than he's ever getting credit for. And you're right, it was that 34 to 54 age bracket, which suggests it's not just young people watching, but people that are either liberal or want a more intelligent type of late-night television talk show other than, you know, the more vacuous celebrity pitch vehicle on the other types of talk shows. So, you know, I'm not always sure that Jon Stewart as movement leader for young people is the right analysis. But one of the things that Dana makes me think about is, you know, Comedy Central was really out on the forefront of putting all of its episodes, the entire episodes and clips of its episodes, for the entire show's run on the web. Mm-hmm. And clearly when Facebook came along and really started to take off as a viable form in 2006, 2007, quickly it became one a part of the sharing culture. It was Jon Stewart and Daily Show. So when you ask Dana, did you watch at home, all of my students will tell you, well, I don't ever watch the show. I just look at the clips online. And so that's been a kind of a shape in political culture and a currency that I think is popular. Whether it affects how these kids go vote, I don't know. But clearly in their news feeds on Facebook and in social media and Twitter, you will see these kinds of clips circulate. And that's still playing out today with Amy Schumer and Jimmy Fallon and others. That's the new currency in the digital age. And Stewart was way on the forefront of that. And in particular, that's how I think he got such a following with young people.
Mm-hmm. Marty in Douglas County. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Kathleen. I want one of your guests to know I just wrote vacuous celebrity pitch vehicle down. That's a great phrase for late-night TV. I was out in Washington in 2010 with a bunch of friends from Madison for the rally to restore sanity. We had been pretty sure we knew how the election was going to turn out, so we thought, oh, we'll go out. There'll probably be a couple hundred other people. I think it was over 300,000 people showed up for that. We were way in the back. We couldn't see anything. We could barely hear, even though they had speakers set up, but it totally didn't matter. Nobody cared. We were all there together. We were all on the same page. People were entertaining each other. I was walking around with about 50 Feingold bumper stickers plastered all over my body and couldn't go 100 feet without somebody stopping and saying, oh, God, we hope he's going to make it. We really support him. It was a really uplifting way to go into that god-awful election in 2010. And without Jon Stewart, I'm sure he's the one who came up with the idea, and Stephen Colbert, it would have been really, really, really grim otherwise.
Do you think, Marty, of Stewart as politically partisan?
Yeah. Yes, I do. But I think he lands equally strongly on politician, no matter where they're coming from. It isn't so much what the politician's party is. It's what is that politician saying and doing. I think he's equally aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your reminiscing. Dr. Jones, your thoughts more about Marty's participation in...
Well, I was back in the back with Marty.
Oh, you were?
We probably high-fived each other. You know, I was there both as a scholar who's written a lot with me and on the same subject, Jeffrey Boehm at Temple University, and we went together both to observe but also participate as fans, I guess, and you know, it was an amazing rally. I'm old enough to have attended quite a few rallies in my day, and everything that Marty describes was correct. The one thing she left out were the homemade signs all trying to outdo each other on how funny they could be, and that was actually really fun because it was echoing the point that was coming from the stage about contemporary political rhetoric and its kind of excessiveness and hyperbolic nature. And everybody got in the good fun. And you know, one of the things we talk about when we talk about satire is how the conception of play is central to it. Laughter, certainly, but also that it's a moment in which citizenship can be performed and played with. And that was a moment to me. It was the nicest rally I'd ever been to. Everybody couldn't be nicer to each other with 300,000 of your best friends. But it was a moment of citizenship unlike the more utilitarian or instrumental of we're going to rally people to go vote. These were people there to kind of plant their body in a space and say something different about the public sphere. And I think journalists had a real hard time trying to make sense of what it meant.
Fascinating. Do you think of Stewart as a partisan guy, Lisa?
You know, most people think that he is an out-and-out liberal, and he does skew in that direction. But again, when somebody or something passes before his vision and that he thinks is stupid, or that way he can make a good joke about it and make a point to his audience. Again, we're speaking about The Daily Show. I think that nothing and nobody is sacred in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And the main overriding theme after the rally caused a lot of people to think and assume that he would run for office someday. And in fact, that question was bandied about a lot during the last week of the show. But I would be very, 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 very surprised if he ever decided to run for any office. Because, again, you have to be fake to be a politician. And as his time on The Daily Show proved, he's not good at being fake. Although there was one quote after the rally that I included in the book where he said, you know, I just stood up there and looked over this vast sea of people, 300,000 souls or so, and he said, I understood how people get power crazy.
Oh.
And how they want, you know, he says, he didn't say he understood how Hitler felt, but he just understood how politicians get drunk on that and get hooked
yes.
on that
mm-hmm.
feel of the crowd all cheering you.
We're going to welcome more phone calls in a moment. If you're on hold, please stay with us. We're talking about the legacy of John Stewart this hour of the program. And here's how you join us, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is at K Dunn Show. There were times that people didn't laugh at what he said because it was really serious, and we're going to hear one of those pieces from The Daily Show and hear from you as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is John Stewart being quite serious after the death of yet another African American, this one on the streets of New York.
I want to apologize for yesterday. I began the show somewhat overwrought because no one involved in the death of Eric Garner was indicted. And I want to apologize because I was wrong.
The person who did the videography of this,
yes.
That person was indicted by a grand jury in Staten Island over gun charges.
Get it? Someone was indicted. They got the shooter of the video. Let that be a lesson to you kids out there. Photographing crime does not pay. But what's so hard to understand about this is that for months, we've been going back and forth about what really happened with Darren Wilson and Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Did Brown have his hands up? Did he not have his hands up? Was Wilson afraid for his life when he killed Brown? Reasonable people, as well as plenty of ones, could... Okay, their pictures didn't come up.
could reach different conclusions. But in this case, there was no ambiguity. Even with clarity, though, people continued to blame this death on anything but the injustices of a flawed system.
Well, what a lot of people don't understand is that man was a big man.
He's a huge individual.
Garner outweighed the officer by probably 150 pounds.
He is gigantor! He is afloat in a parade! They had to bring him down. He was the abominable bro man.
Okay, yeah, he outweighed one cop by 150 pounds. But what about the other five cops? Or maybe that's just how much racial progress America has made. You know, it used to be black people were only 3/5 of a white person. Now they're like 6.
Dr. Jones.
Yeah, I think his most poignant moments, and this is the beauty of comedy, is when someone finally stops with the jokes and gets really serious
right.
and looks at you and says something in very clear and commonsensical and ethical language. You know, Stephen Colbert appeared and did testimony before Congress, and he appeared in character, and some people said that what he was doing was a joke. But he broke at the end out of character, and he quoted the New Testament, and he said, you know, the line about the least of these, this is how you treat your brother. And it was really made you tear up. And Stewart has these moments where he puts it down and says, we're not joking tonight about this. This is pathetic. And he apologizes, I'm sorry, I didn't do my comedy homework, but I'm going to be serious. And I think it makes for a moment where people, you know, he's criticized by some people because there's always a joke to be made. To me, that's that clear moment where he's doing a service by saying, you know, there's no jokes in this one. Let's
right.
just be serious about it. And I think it's when he's his most poignant.
Yeah. Jim in Mayville, our next caller. Hi, Jim.
Hello?
Hi, Jim. Go right ahead.
Jim Grant here. I'm from Mayville, Dodge County. I'm 76 years old. I didn't discover John Stewart until last year.
Oh.
I've got 31 of them taped. I love him. I think he's great. We'll miss him deeply.
I know. Well, you've got a few years you can catch up on him if you only started last year. Why do you love him, Jim?
Well, because he gets to the truth. He tells the truth. He doesn't... You know, he does it in a joking manner sometimes, but it's so factual, at least what I read. And I'm in a pretty red area. Red might be an R-E-D.
Uh-huh. I get you. Thank you very much for the call. You tend to think that people have watched him forever, Lisa, but some people just discovered him just last year, huh?
Well, that's very heartening. And people will continue to discover him because, again, as Dr. Jones pointed out, it was such a breakthrough when Comedy Central started putting each episode on the following day. You know, you could go in and you didn't have to wait until the repeat in the early evening.
Yes.
You could go and watch and, again, take the clips. I mean, and they even made it easy to share certain segments. I mean, they pioneered that. And now, of course, they set the stage for, you know, the Jimmy Fallons and the other late night hosts who do the exact same thing and to make it easy for people to share. And I think that has also contributed to the growing and increasing the audience in among generations like Jim's.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is you can go back and watch from the very beginning and see if, you know, when he first started, he was a little bit of a deer in headlights because he didn't know where he was going to go with this. And I think if he believes that if he lasted 2 years, if the show lasted 2 years, he would be really happy because up until then, you know, his first talk show lasted 2 years, and then he played in a whole stretch of really bad movie cameos and roles,
and he was not used to experiencing longevity really in anything up until the Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, anytime you want a dose, yes, he's not there anymore with new material, but anytime you want a dose, you just go on the website and there he is.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim, for the call. What did his, I know you interviewed some of his high school teachers. What did they say about him, Lisa?
He was a class clown. He was always looking for an easy joke, and sometimes they fell flat. And he was a good student. He didn't excel. His brother was the prodigy of the family, and he was more interested in just getting out of Jersey and going on. He actually was a very talented soccer player in high school and then going on into college at college, and I can't remember the name of the college.
William and Mary.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
In Virginia. And he would have continued and possibly turned pro if it wasn't for an injury.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. He was a hot ticket.
I guess he must have been really good.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting, Dr. Jones, when you think about it, if he could have been a soccer player and then we wouldn't be talking about this at all, right?
Well, you never know. I mean, he's always been drawn to comedy, but I think that, you know, the fact that he was, again, not from the political world made him more of an everyman figure that made him, you know, popular for people like Jim because he seems to be talking the truth.
Right. Yeah. Well, what's he going to do now? What do you hope he will do now? He's still a relatively young man, Dr. Jones. Where would you put him if you could?
I have no idea. I tend to agree with Lisa that he will be able to call his own shots in whatever type of media production he wants to do. Clearly, I mean, he was the Daily Show, and really him launched so much talent. I can't think of anybody outside of Lorne Michaels who's had such an effect on launching so many careers.
Yes,
as
yes.
Has done. And maybe he'll continue to play that role. We'll see. I think he needs to hibernate a little and do some World Wrestling Federation stuff like he did the other night to you know, think about what he wants to do. But you could clearly see he was tired of, you know, fighting the Fox Newses daily. And we'll see. We'll see where he ends up.
Yeah. And that is a sign of generosity, isn't it, really, to be able to develop the talent and to the point where those people had shows he mentored.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, he really, the creative dimensions of the Comedy Central writing team and the talent, you know, they went through a lot of correspondence, if you saw the last show, that
right.
didn't really launch. But, you know, kind of like Saturday Night Live, but some, the Ed Helms, the Stephen Colberts, the Steve Carells, really rose to the top. And, it was a good comedy lab. That show is scripted, but there's some improvisation, and writers have the ability to create segments, and you know, he'll be missed in that regard for sure.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, do you have an inkling where he's going to land now?
Back in Jersey, but he also is starting an animal sanctuary, because one of the cornerstones of working at the Daily Show is that you could bring your dog to work.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, what a place!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was great.
And he's adopted, you know, three-legged pit bulls through the years. And he had cats when he was first living in New York in the 90s. And I believe his wife, Tracy, just came out with a kid's book about animals. So that's probably a good segue into the sanctuary. I'm not sure where it is, or I don't think it's been officially launched yet.
Ooh.
But that's going to be he's going to be executive producing that.
Oh, well, it's a good segue for us to do another talk show on this topic with her, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you both so much. I thoroughly enjoyed the hour and both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest, Lisa Rozhak, New York Times bestselling author. She's the author of Angry Optimist, The Life and Times of John Stewart. Dr. Jeffrey Jones is professor and Lamkin K. Chair for the Peabody, director of the George Foster Peabody Awards. He is the author of Satirical Television and Political Engagement, the entertaining politics. Thanks to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for producing this show.